Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker. Into the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown.
And he's got it at the 10-yard line.
Touchdown. Touchdown. Touchdown, Buffalo. The Bills win it in overtime.
Welcome to Orchard Park. Welcome to One Bills Live. We are live in our Seneca studio. We're right next door to New Era Field, which for the first time in a month will be quiet. Actually, there's high school football there tonight. What am I talking about? It's not going to be quiet tonight, but no NFL football there this weekend. Welcome to the show. I'm John Murphy. Chris Brown is with us co-hosting today for Steve Tasker. Great to have you back here, Brownie.
Let's go.
You got your own little spot over here now, your own seat.
Let's go.
Make yourself at home.
I saw a nameplate over here. I don't know if it's been fully installed yet, but... It's nice to have it over here. It's like you know, when Corey Legit comes in, the new locker room nameplate comes in.
There you go. We expect that Steve will be back on Monday, and we're happy to have Chris here today. We got a good show for you. It's weird not having a home game. In a weird way, Chris, you and I live parallel lives sometimes in this respect, you know, because we follow this team, go on the road, go to the home games.
Right.
I feel like it's time for a road game. You know what I mean? I'd rather be home. I'd rather not have to jump on a plane tomorrow and – it's only a half-hour flight to Cleveland, but I feel like it's time for this Bills team, as part of their growth process, their steps forward, to get back on the road. They haven't been on the road in a month.
Road's been kind to them, though, too.
Yeah.
3-0 on the road. You know, I think everybody's seen the stat by this point in time. If they haven't, if the Bills can find a way to beat the Browns on Sunday, it's the first time they'll be 4-0 on the road to start a season since 65.
Yeah.
That is
AFL championship.
55 years. Good Lord, man.
Yeah. Great.
I mean, holy cow. So, yeah, good on them if they can pull it off this week, because I don't know why. I have this feeling in my gut that this is going to be a very nip-and-tuck game.
Me too.
I mean, the Browns are backed into a corner. You know, any time you got somebody backed into a corner, they're going to play desperate. And so you know that's what you're going to get from them. Not all that dissimilar to what the Bills saw from the Eagles, a team that was kind of in a – very little margin for error type situation and came out firing. I think the Browns, especially in their own building, are going to come out the same way. So I think the Bills really have to weather the storm in that game, especially those first 10 game minutes, so to speak. You really got to kind of weather the storm there and hope you can make some plays of your own and somehow, some way, get up on the scoreboard, because I think you can turn that crowd against the Browns if you do that.
The Dolphins were desperate too, although they did not have kind of the talent to back up their desperation. The Eagles did have that talent. They were desperate. And you're right, here go the Cleveland Browns, supposed to be a major deep into the playoffs contender this year, and instead they're 2-6. They finally get to play at home. They played the third toughest schedule in the NFL so far this year. They'll play the third easiest schedule based on opponents' one-loss record down the stretch here, the second half of the season. But, Chris, this, you know, you're like me, and we talk about this a lot, you kind of live this life of getting ready for games. And as I got ready for this game, and I'll be honest with you, the tipping point for me came last night watching the Browns a month ago go to war with Seattle, and they hung tough with Seattle for most of that game. Now, they lost that game at home a month ago, October 13th. That was the Bills' bye weekend. But they were tough, and they were a tough out that day. And I got thinking, the Browns, with that talent they have, they've got at least three guys who can take over a game. And let me listen to see if you agree with this.
I can
Odell
hear
Beckham can take over a game. He hasn't done it yet this year, but we know he can do it. He can take over a game. He can make plays that all of a sudden you're like, well, we can't stop that. What are we going to do? Myles Garrett can take over a game. I really believe that. I think he is top three in terms of pass rushing defensive linemen in the NFL. He's an all-around good defensive lineman. He can take over a game. I think Nick Chubb can take over a game, and only his second year. He's got 100 yards per game the first half of the season. Three guys who can take over a game. Three different guys, one on defense, two on offense. Look, there are tough matchups all over the field for Buffalo in this game on Sunday, and those three would be preeminent in my mind. What do you think?
Yes, I would agree with that. I mean, we cannot forget, this is a team that throttled the Ravens in Baltimore. I mean, they beat them by 22 points. So, you know, you hate to use the any given Sunday cliche, but with this team, it may apply more than any other. Because in any given week, if they are hitting on all cylinders, they can be a very, very dangerous team. And you have to go into that game expecting that so that you are prepared to have an answer or at least come up with solutions to stem that tide to keep them from dominating a football game. Because the ability to dominate a football game, if they are playing in sync and executing, is 100% absolutely there. That the ability is there to take over a football game as a team. And you can look at I just finished watching the Denver game with the Browns last week. Brandon Allen's making his first career start. I mean, you're thinking, even though this thing's in Denver, this is a layup win for Cleveland. You know, turn the dogs loose on Brandon Allen, hold down their offense, put enough points on the board, and you're good. And they couldn't do it. One for five in the red zone, just kicking field goals. They get a turnover. Murph, they get a turnover on a forced fumble. Denzel Ward jumps on it at the Denver 25-yard line. They can't get it in the end zone. They can't stick it in the end zone with all that talent on offense. I'm watching this game going, who am I watching here?
It makes you mad.
It didn't even look like
it
that.
It makes you mad. It made me mad when you see them.
It kind of took me back to the Browns fan that did that YouTube video, Factory of Sadness.
Yeah.
When that line where he says, it's like everyone else is playing another sport than you are. and obviously we are far removed from those Browns. At least I believe they, from a talent perspective, they are unquestionably. But the results are largely the same. It is... I can't imagine being a Browns fan right now, and not because of all the hype and the expectation that went into the offseason with the acquisitions and the trades that they made and this, that, and the other. I kind of saw them as a 500 team because it was a lot of pieces to put together and gel and say, let's make this a smooth-running machine, which will also bring us back to the Bills offense and the 9 new pieces there. And people are still saying, well, this team, why can't this team score more points? Why haven't they hit their stride? Why aren't they more in sync? I think Cleveland's another example of that.
Yep.
Just to a much more, a far less successful extent than what we've seen here in Buffalo.
Yep. Schedule plays into that. I think this factor plays into it. We're going to talk about this to get things going today. I think culture plays into it, right? The Bills now in year 3 of Sean McDermott have established a culture, what's accepted, mm-hmm. what's expected, and how they practice, how they get ready for games, how they play. The Browns have not done that. They've got a rookie first-year head coach, Freddie Kitchens, a holdover from the previous regime that was failed, and they have not established a culture. They have plenty of talent. They've collected talent, but not established a culture. It was, I want to say, about a year, maybe a year and a half ago, Chris, when Sean McDermott... We got shows out of it. Sean McDermott said kind of famously, culture trumps talent. And there were people, not up in arms, but people saying, what do you mean? You need talent. And he didn't deny that. But he said, culture trumps talent. And to me, this Sunday is culture, Bills, versus talent, Browns. And I'm eager to see how this plays out. Now, I will give you this. Culture, I think, is a long-haul thing. It's a long-term thing. You establish a good culture, you stay with it, you develop it, you enhance it, you grow it with the growth mindset that the Bills have established, and it pays off. Does culture pay off on Sunday when you line up and play? I think over the long term it does, but does it matter on any given Sunday? Does culture trump talent? That's our Twitter poll. We want to get you involved in that. Go to Twitter.
It's a tough answer, too.
Yeah, well, you can see even the results. Does culture trump talent? And will we see it on display here this Sunday? On Twitter, you can vote on the Twitter poll. We got 250 votes in already. You can send in a tweet. We'll read them on the tweet sheet. Or you can give us a call to discuss, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Good to have more than a yes or no answer. Does culture trump talent? Do you believe it does? Well, 47% of the early respondents in our poll say, not in the week-to-week NFL. I think that's a very thoughtful answer. Culture does trump talent. I would agree. But does it matter this Sunday? Does it matter on any given Sunday? 36% of our respondents say yes, culture trumps talent all the time. And 17% say no, culture does not trump talent at all. What do you think? It's a It's kind of a head in the clouds question. It's sort of a philosophical question.
And it's,
I think we can handle
and
it.
And I think
you?
The reason the voting is the way it is because this can get a little muddy too. Because just because, I mean, they're not mutually exclusive.
That's right.
You can have culture and talent on your roster. And I think, you know, when we say this about the Bills and that they have the culture, I don't think we're saying they're devoid of talent.
That's right.
But I think it's safe to say that Cleveland has more of the elite talent in this matchup, in this game.
Yeah.
And so I think the question is apropos. So will that elite talent trump the Bills' culture, which has some talent but not nearly as much as the Browns do? And to this point, we've seen the talent that the Browns have not get them a whole lot in terms of the W column. With a 2-6 record right now. But I think the danger is always there. As I mentioned, the Ravens, I mean, they beat the Ravens in Baltimore by 22 points.
They almost beat Seattle a month ago.
Right.
I mean, they're talented. They have players.
So in the week-to-week NFL, I you know, you hate to say the any given Sunday thing, but it's a fact.
Yeah,
it applies. And I think people will also say that the NFL, to a large degree, is a matchup league.
Yep.
And you look at some of the matchups that Cleveland can throw out there, and you say, whoa, all right, you may have an answer for Odell Beckham Jr. if you have Tre'Davious White traveling with him the whole game. But are we feeling good about the Jarvis Landry matchup?
Right.
Are we feeling good about the run defense against Nick Chubb, who is, what is he, second in the AFC in rushing yards?
Well, he's fourth in the league.
And fourth in the league. And, you know,
are
we lock, stock, and barrel feeling good about the Myles Garrett matchup?
Like, right.
Who's got 10 sacks in the league and leads the AFC there? So
they got matchups all over the place that present problems for the Bills or anybody. And that's where the talent comes into it. Let's hear from you. Give us a call. 803-0550, toll free 1-888-550-2550. I love this game. Let me say that, too, this Friday before it's Sunday. I love this game because of this question, culture versus talent, because of the matchup issues it presents, because of where the Bills are at 6-2 and what lies ahead with the rest of their schedule. I love this matchup. I can't wait for kickoff on Sunday. I think it's going to be a very interesting game, and we'll see how it plays out. And I love it, too, Chris, and I was thinking about this overnight today as well. The deeper you get into this, and if you've got a good record and you're looking at a playoff berth, the games get better. And that's something that we have not had enough of around here, right? We know this. We haven't had enough meaningful November-December games. Well, here it is. It's November. Here's a game that counts. We got AFC matchups coming up, still important games coming up. These games matter a lot. The stakes are raised because the Bills have been so good so far, and that makes it really fun.
And I think if you beat the Browns this week, you effectively bury them. They're done. Seven losses, they're not going to make it.
Right.
They're not going to make the playoffs with a seventh loss. They're already three games behind in the loss column right now to the last playoff participant as the standings currently are, with Indianapolis at 5-3, you know, Cleveland at 2-6. So you're three games back in the loss column with eight to play. You lose this week to the Bills, seven losses. I mean, you're probably not coming back from that. Certainly not with the lack of consistency that Cleveland has played their first eight games thus far this year. And, you know, I'm not going to pretend to look at the rest of their schedule and know what that is. But I know they got to play Baltimore again. I know I'm pretty sure they have to play Pittsburgh again. And so, you know,
Cleveland's schedule gets easier.
Yeah, play Pittsburgh twice.
Yeah,
and Pittsburgh's playing better football right now.
They get Cincinnati twice.
At Arizona. They have Miami on the schedule, so there are some winnable games there, but I don't care. You get to seven losses, the best you're looking at is 9-7, and I don't see the Browns running the table there.
Yep. All right, so what do you think? Culture is the question, and we got a good show planned for you here today. Does culture trump talent? Do you think yes, it does? Do you think not necessarily on game day, week-to-week NFL, or do you think it doesn't matter at all? We got phone lines open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Send in a tweet. We could read it on the tweet sheet. We got some of that coming in. Or vote in the Twitter poll. We got a good show for you. Let's tell you what's going on. It is Friday. The Bills are practicing. They probably have about 15, 30 more minutes of practice. They're outdoors on the practice field outside the AdPro Sports Training Center. And they'll be out there for practice today. On our show, coming up, At the bottom of this hour, Dustin Fox will join us at 12:30. He is a former Bills defensive back, former Browns defensive back, and now a radio host in Cleveland. He's part of their postgame broadcast down there in Cleveland. They bounce pre- and postgame host of Bull and Fox on 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. He's coming up at 12:30. Greg Cosell joins us Fridays at 1 o'clock. He'll be with us today. And Lorenzo Alexander joins us Fridays at 2. We'll have the lowdown with Lorenzo coming up at 2 o'clock. Chris is with us all day long. He'll be right here with us till 3. In a different kind of a show today, Sabres hockey face off at 2 over in Stockholm. So we will be breaking off the radio side at 1:30 this afternoon, halfway through the show. We continue with the show on MSG. So if you're interested in what we're talking about the Bills, at 1:30, halfway through the show, join us over on MSG, and we'll finish up until 3 o'clock. You got all that? You good with all that?
I'm good with all that.
Okay.
I think the other thing that comes to mind, at least for me, with this culture trumping talent argument,
yeah,
is the other thing that culture does with respect to talent. I think culture maximizes talent. So the talent that you do have, I think, is more easily maximized in a healthy culture as opposed to,
I agree,
you
really
know,
good point.
One that's lacking.
I.e. Odell Beckham.
Well, right. Well, I think there's a number of things at play. I think lack of team culture is part of that. I also am not convinced that, you know, they have the best guy pulling the trigger on the play calls either for that offense. I mean, right now, and I think we mentioned it yesterday when I was on the show here from the sidelines during practice, but right now Odell Beckham Jr. is having the fewest targets per game on average in his entire career at 8.3 per game. Like I said, I was watching the film of last week's game against Denver. He was not targeted in that game until 4:40 left in the first quarter, and they had the ball three times. That was their third possession, and they finally threw him the ball. Now, I understand there are certain progressions. I'm sure there's double coverage a lot on Beckham where he's not available to Baker Mayfield, but, I mean, Mayfield had thrown like 15 passes already, and not one had even gone in Beckham's direction until that point, which just, that blows my mind.
Yeah.
I can't fathom that. That doesn't make sense to me. It does not compute, Murph. Does not compute.
I agree. They got issues. Maybe they solve them this week. Let us know what you
think.
Well,
let's hope not. But
yeah, let's get a few phone calls in here. What do you think? Does culture trump talent? Does it matter this Sunday when the Bills play the Browns in Cleveland? Frank on the line from Buffalo. Go ahead, Frank. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. Love the show. I just wanted to call and pretty much say that, you know, all week on the radio, I've heard how Cleveland is, you know, better than the record, how we really have to worry we're underdogs in this game. But at the end of the day, we're 6-2, and I kind of want our team and our players to have swag and have, hey, they have to beat us. We're dangerous, too. And I just feel like it's kind of been more of a sense of we're afraid of them. And I don't think it should be that way, so I'll hang up and listen.
I don't sense that.
No, I don't either. I want to talk about that.
And let me just kind of, I'll shift the conversation of what you're portraying the Bills to be to what I think it is. My feeling is this team, number one, relishes being an underdog. I believe that. But number two, and this is probably more important, I don't think it's an exercise in being intimidated by an opponent or watch out for this, watch out for that. I think Coach McDermott, as a rule, has his team respect every opponent. I don't think they fear anyone, but I think they respect everyone, because I think what that does is it inherently has a player and then as a group, as a team, properly prepared mentally to avoid complacency, which gobbles up teams so many times through the course of a season in the NFL. And unfortunately, it often pins a loss on a team that they really should not have. Case in point, Dallas Cowboys versus New York Jets a couple of weeks ago. Are you kidding me? That Dallas team losing to the Jets? That should not happen. But they played down to their level of competition. They were complacent in that game, and they ended up losing by 2 points, a game they should not have lost.
Yeah. I would say this, too, and I get what you're saying, Frank. I don't think there's fear in the Buffalo locker room about that talent level in Cleveland. I do think that this coaching staff has taken the time this week to talk to them about more so than what Cleveland has as to what Buffalo has. And I think at midseason, the Bills coaching staff probably found it an opportune time to sort of remind them of who they are and what they've done, that they are disciplined, that they have a good thing going on here. How many times have guys said that? Even newcomers said there's a really good vibe in the locker room. I think they've reminded them of what the culture is here, of what the how they got here to 6-2, and how they have to continue that, as opposed to look how bad the situation is in Cleveland. And it's not fear of Cleveland. It's respect, as Chris said, for those players and the matchup issues they create. And I think this coaching staff wanted Buffalo players to respect what they've done so far and what they've accomplished so far and how good they have a chance to be, which is pretty significant, I think.
And if you've watched any of the post-game speeches by Coach McDermott after victories on BuffaloBills.com this year, shameless plug, one of the phrases that he has used almost every single time is stay humble and hungry. There is a mandate of humility with this team where they don't want them flexing their muscles and showboating or talking big. They want their play to speak for itself, and that's rooted in the humility, because if you don't humble yourself, this league will very quickly humble you by handing you a loss that you probably don't deserve. But if you perform that way, or you prepare that way, or don't properly prepare, this league will humble you very quickly. And this is a team with the talent that's capable of doing it if you don't go in with the right frame of mind.
Bills Brown Sunday, 1 o'clock kickoff. We got the call for you right here on the radio side on Sports Radio 550 WGR. Eric Wood with me up in the booth. Sal will be in the sidelines. What do you think? Does culture trump talent? Is that on display here this Sunday when the Bills play in Cleveland? Gary on the line from Louisiana. Hello, Gary. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Great.
Look, I think with this question here, I think it's kind of both, because obviously culture is real important, but we need talent too. You just hope that the talent buys into the culture, you know.
Yeah,
because you need it. You need it. I would like some, you know, some more, you know, better speed receivers, you know, a little bit better than that. You know, obviously a lot of times talented players have sometimes a reputation, you know, bad attitudes, this and that, but if you can get the right talented players to buy into the culture that they're doing, then that would be huge. Because remember those 90s teams, they had some knuckleheads a little bit, but they all bought into the culture eventually, and that's when they started winning. That's what it's going to take.
I think you're dead on, Gary. I do. And, Chris, I think Gary gets to a point where when you see the Bills make signings, acquisitions, even Corey Legit this week, I don't know about you, I won't speak for you, but I often think to myself, what do they know about Corey Legit that leads them to believe that he will fit in here? Because I think that's really important to Bean and McDermott.
Yeah.
And how much work must they have to do to make sure that they're not bringing in someone who can sabotage the culture or not go along with the culture here? I think that's probably a primary consideration for them when they're plugging holes like they're trying to do with Corey Legit this week.
And I think the other thing philosophically that's important is you have to build the culture first before maybe you accumulate the talent that will put you over the top ultimately. And that's not to say you compromise on the kind of talent that you want to bring in. It's just, I think it's important, and I think this is evident in the way that Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott have built this team, is that they've made sure that they had people with, as they say all the time, the right DNA to fit into the way we operate here, the way we do business every single day, the way we prepare for every single opponent, whether it's week one or week 16, whether we're 6-2 or 2-6, we want the people that are going to still operate the same way every single day, because that will help us build our culture and get it fortified to where it's an automatic. And, you know, you talk about culture and stuff. I'll give you another example. The Pittsburgh Steelers, let's think about all the players that were at the high end of the talent meter for them. Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, Ben Roethlisberger. They're operating without all three of those components right now for one reason or another. Roethlisberger due to injury, obviously. They've won their last three in a row. Why? Because the culture there is so strong and fortified that even when sometimes they are stripped of talent or devoid of talent due to other circumstances like injury, they can persevere. I'm not saying they're going to the Super Bowl, but there's a lot of other franchises in this league that if you took the best three players off of their team, they would drop into a black hole, never to be seen again. The Steelers have won their last three games in a row because there's a culture there that helps to right the ship, where even if they are devoid of elite talent, they can persevere and press forward, maybe not to the level of success that they could with that elite talent, but they can still have a measure of success because of the culture that is in place there. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, and it's a very, very, very good example of what's going on in Pittsburgh this year. Our question of the day, culture versus talent. Sean McDermott said it more than a year ago, culture trumps talent, and I think we've got culture versus talent coming up here on Sunday in Cleveland with the Bills and the Cleveland Browns. What do you think? Give us a call to discuss, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Vote in our Twitter poll or send in a tweet. We got some action on the tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official movers of the Buffalo Bills. Bills fan 12-83 says, it's going to be an even mix of both. With not a lot of talent and great culture, you cannot win. With tons of talent and no culture, you may win some, but when the chips are down, you won't fight back. I love the way the Bills are doing it. Talented culture fits. Go Bills.
Yeah,
that's good.
I mean, I remember talking to Lorenzo Alexander at the beginning of the season about how this team was constructed and what it's poised for. And he said, look, I played on a Washington team that had 12 Pro Bowlers on it, and we didn't go to the playoffs. You know, there's an example of talent and no culture.
Yeah.
And where has the Washington franchise gone for the better part of the last 10 years? Not very far. And have they had talented players? They've had some of the – you could argue they've had some of the most talented players in the league in the last era, the last 25 years. I mean, run down the list. Sean Taylor, Clinton Portis. I mean, it's a countless number of players that have come through that franchise. But as a organization, they haven't won diddly-poo, as Jim Mora once said. So,
like it.
I mean, it matters. It matters.
Yeah, let's hear from you about it. We'll talk about it all day long. We will give you a heads up. Once we go to MSG only, the phone calls will be over. So if you want to have something to say about this, you got to do it in the next
hour.
Do
it now.
Do it now. Chris, you're going to go out and check on Bill's practice?
Yeah, right? I mean, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot to say with
about
respect
injuries.
To the injury
That's
report
good.
Because everybody was practicing today in week 10. How about that?
That's good.
That's great.
We'll talk about that. Chris will take a break and do that. We've got Dustin Fox coming up. He is a pregame, postgame host on the Cleveland Browns Radio Network. And we're just getting rolling on this Friday afternoon. Chris is in for Steve Tasker. It's One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health. Live from the Seneca Studios, Seneca Resorts and Casino, nothing comes close. Welcome back, One Bills Live. I'm John Murphy. Steve is off today. Chris Brown joins us throughout the day. And on the line with us right now to talk about the Cleveland Browns is a man who played defensive back here in Buffalo for the Bills 2007-2008. Also played a bit with the Browns. He is a radio guy now, the host of Bull and Fox on 92.3 FM Radio, the Fan in Cleveland, and a Browns pre- and post-game host. Dustin Fox on the line with us. Hello, Dustin. John Murphy here in Buffalo. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Hey, John. Good to be with you.
Hey, we've talked about this, my co-host here, Chris Brown, about in the first half hour. This game, it's the most intriguing game I think the Bills have played so far this year because we know how talented the Browns are. And we've been talking about it today. It's almost like a matchup of a really talented Cleveland team against a Buffalo team without that kind of talent. But Buffalo has like kind of a team culture that maybe the Browns would appreciate. What do you make of that comparison?
I think it's a fair assessment. I think that, you know, nobody thought the Browns would be sitting here at 2-6, you know, halfway through the season. I mean, a lot of people thought they'd be above 500. You know, maybe they'd be sitting there like Buffalo, you know, with six wins. But I think it's a fair assessment. I mean, the Browns really don't have that team chemistry. And that's kind of, I think, been the biggest problem with this club is just there's so much talent and maybe too much talent because they have not been able to come together to – you know, to win games, and that's kind of been the biggest problem thus far.
It's not too late for that to happen this season, though, is it? I mean,
no.
They're approaching that point, but not yet.
Well, this is probably the game. I mean, like, if the Browns can't win this game, the season's probably over. I kind of thought the season was over last weekend when they couldn't beat, you know, Denver with Brandon Allen, who no one even knew who the guy was before the game. But no, I mean, they could turn it around. I mean, this division's kind of wide open. I Baltimore's schedule gets a little bit tougher here as we go. But no, I mean, they would need to win. Gosh, I don't know. I mean, at least six of the last eight games, probably to kind of be in the mix, or maybe seven of the last eight, which is not unheard of. But the way they play, they're not a good team right now.
Yeah, tell me. I don't just want anyone to dump on Coach Freddie Kitchens, but where does he and his coaching staff? How much blame? I don't know about blame, but how much responsibility do they have for this rough 2-6 start?
I think a lot. I mean, Freddie's a young coach. I don't blame him because, you know, this is his opportunity. I don't know that he was necessarily ready for the job, but he got it. And, you know, it's been rough. I mean, he has had a lot on his plate, you know, being a first-time head coach, first-time play caller at the same time. I think there's been so much that he has had to deal with that it's been a lot. And, you know, I do think that they deserve some blame because the play calls have been questionable and some of the things that they've done with game management stuff have been, you know, definitely questionable, especially late in games. But I'm not ready to write him off. I mean, like, a lot of people here in Cleveland just want the Browns to just fire him and move on. And I just think it's too early for that. But, at some point you'll have to have a conversation if the Browns – let's say the Browns go 6-10 or something like that. I mean, if that happens, then, yeah, you have the conversation. But I still think the Browns are going to rattle off some wins here.
And one more question about coaching. Is the main problem with the coaching, is it those game management decisions, play calls included, or is it bigger than that, like failure to set a tone or failure to create a culture even? What do you think?
I think it could be a little bit of both. He's a young coach, and I think sometimes, you know, players, coaches – can be a little bit maybe too friendly with the players and kind of let things happen in the locker room. I mean, I've had coaches like that in the past. I've had coaches who are more disciplinarians, and those coaches tend to kind of have more success, frankly. But, it's a young team. He's a young coach, and I think they're trying to figure it out right now, which is it's a tough spot to be in for him because he's never done it before. I mean, this is literally the first time he's ever been a head coach ever. And he was only an offensive coordinator for eight games last year.
Right. And speaking of offensive coordinator, I've heard it suggested that maybe the Browns and Kitchens would benefit from letting the offensive coordinator, it's Todd Monken, right, letting him call the plays?
Yeah.
Would that help?
That's been brought up, but that's not going to happen. I mean, listen, they hired Freddie Kitchens because of the success he had last season, the final eight games with Baker Mayfield, and he called the plays. And so that's kind of the reason they hired him. For him to – you know, pass off the play calling dudes, I think at this point would be a mistake. And I think it would almost be like, you know, him kind of waving the white flag to this point, because that's not why he was hired. I mean, he was hired to call plays. He was very creative last year with some of the stuff they did offensively with Baker Mayfield. And to this point, they kind of haven't really been able to get back to that point. But no, I think that'd be a mistake. And Todd Monken talked about it yesterday. Todd said, listen, I was hired here. I knew my role, and that was never, ever on the table.
We're on the line with Dustin Fox, former Bills defensive back, former Browns defensive back, radio host in Cleveland, their pre- and post-game radio host. Hey, Dustin, let's talk about Baker Mayfield for a minute. The drop in his numbers is pretty dramatic, but I'm thinking of that, looking at Browns games and thinking he's more of a reflection of the overall problems than he is maybe the cause of it. What do you think?
That's a good question. You know, I don't know exactly where or how to pinpoint his lack of success this season. I mean, he's the worst quarterback in football statistically, and that just it kind of boggles my mind, because this is a guy that last season, you know, broke all these rookie passing records, Peyton Manning, Russell Wilson, and was poised for a big season this year. So I think the biggest thing, John, with Baker at this point, and this is kind of scary, is that he lacks confidence. And he doesn't really have the swagger that he had last season, that he had at Oklahoma when he won the Heisman Trophy. And so I don't know how he gets it back, but he needs to get back to kind of being confident. he's not taking chances. He's being very conservative with the football. And frankly, I think he's overthinking things, and that's why he's turning the ball over so much.
How could they not be forcing the ball to Odell Beckham? And do you anticipate that'll be part of the game plan this week?
I hope so. I mean, this is it's a joke. I mean, this guy is one of the best receivers in football, and they get in the red zone and they act like he's not even on the field. I mean, if I was the offensive coordinator or if I was Baker Mayfield, I'd be looking like, where's 13? I'm throwing to him no matter what, and just trying to give him a chance to make a play. And they just haven't really done that at this point, which. I'm talking 5 hours a day on the radio to my fans and or our fans, I should say, and no one gets it. I mean, they got to take some chances to give Odell some shots to make some plays.
And that's just by my count one of the many matchup problems the Bills face this week, including Nick Chubb. I mean, Nick Chubb is a bona fide star in the making here, right? 800 yards rushing already.
Yeah, he's a good player, man. I mean, he really is what I believe. It, you know, should be the offense. I mean, the offense should run through Nick Chubb, and then everything else just kind of, you know, happens after that. I mean, should play action pass. The Browns should be, frankly, a conservative team. I mean, when Baker Mayfield throws 35 times or more, they're 2-10. That's his record. So the Browns should be definitely a more run-oriented team, and they get Kareem Hunt back this week too. I don't know how much he'll give him, but he'll be out there on the field. He'll be their third down back this week, I'm sure. But yeah, I mean, Nick Chubb is an absolute monster. I mean, this guy's, you know, for his second season, is a beast.
I want to ask you about one other player on offense before we move to the Browns defense, Dustin, and that's a guy who'd probably consider one of the steadying influences on that offense, and that's the center, J.C. Treader. He's a Buffalo area native, Akron, New York, went to Cornell. He's fit in well there, hasn't he, coming over from Green Bay a couple years ago?
Yeah, he really has. He's a smart guy, obviously, with the Cornell ties, but he's been kind of that steady piece on the offensive line. And anybody who knows offensive line play knows the center's kind of the quarterback of that group, and they have to kind of get everybody set and keep everybody in line. And JC's been great. You know, there was some concern if they were going to, like, let him walk or whatever. And the Browns drafted Austin Corbett, who they just traded in the second round last year, and there was some thought that maybe he would end up being the center. But now that he's kind of been moved off of him, I think this is a great, great move for the Browns. I mean, the offensive line's been a little bit of a concern this season, but you know, they've got a couple pieces up there with JC and Joel Bitonio, who are really, really good players. And I'm just happy they got JC back because he's a really good leader too.
Yep.
I mean, he is a great guy, and the team really responds to him.
I asked you about Chubb. I asked you about Odell. Now, on the defensive side, here's the other major matchup issue I see for the Bills. Myles Garrett. Nobody's really done a great job with him this year yet, have they?
He's a beast, man. I mean, that's why, you know, when you're the number one overall pick, that's what you're supposed to be, and he's lived up to it to this point. I mean, this guy is a bona fide, you know, potential defensive player of the year. I mean, that's how good he's been. And, you know, obviously Buffalo will have their hands full. Everyone's had their hands full with this guy this season.
Hey, I'm wondering, Dustin, Olivier Vernon, you think he will play? Yeah. He hasn't practiced much this week, right?
It doesn't sound like he's going to go, which is a concern because, I mean, he's kind of been the guy that has, you know, kind of taken some heat off of Garrett and allowed Garrett to make some plays. So that's a big loss if he can't go. But, yeah, he's not been practicing.
And one final question for you about the atmosphere in First Energy Stadium on Sunday. There will be Bills fans there. But Browns fans are among the most loyal in the league. What do you think the atmosphere will be like there? What will it be like Sunday?
Anxious.
Yeah.
Nervous energy, I'm sure, because the fans know that if they don't win this game, and the season's definitely over. It'll be good. I mean, this team was supposed to be a lot better than they are. And I think fans are just right now kind of like confused because they thought that they'd be in contention for the playoffs like you guys are. And it's just kind of disappointing. But we'll see how the first quarter goes. If the first quarter goes well, I mean, the Browns played so well against Baltimore a couple weeks back that, you know, fans kind of expected that to happen all season. If they can just kind of get back to that and be a little bit more consistent, I think the energy will be great. I think the Browns have a chance to win the game. I mean, listen, it's a 3-point spread. It's kind of a toss-up game, so
sure.
It could go either way.
I watched them go head-to-head with Seattle. I watched that game last night. I was like, these guys are for real. When they don't beat themselves, they're for real, aren't they?
Well, But that's what they do. I mean, they lead the league in penalties.
Yep.
And, you know, obviously Baker Mayfield with, you know, all 14 interceptions, I mean, or 12 interceptions, it's bad. I mean, they can't find a way to kind of get out of their own way.
I think it's going to be a really fun game. I look forward to seeing you there, Dustin. Thanks for being on with us today.
Yep. You got it, John. Thanks, man.
Dustin Fox, he's the Browns pre- and post-game host, the host of Bull and Fox on 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. Played cornerback here for a couple of years with the Buffalo Bills, and we thank Dustin for joining us. Back with more in a moment, including your take. Does culture trump talent? Does it mean more in the long term, or can it even work on a week-by-week, Sunday-by-Sunday basis? Let us know what you think. We're coming back with more One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, live from the Seneca Studio, Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing comes close. Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Chris Brown is in for Steve Tasker today. He is back with us talking about Sunday's game, the Bills and the Cleveland Browns. What do you think? Look, Sean McDermott said it pretty famously about a year and a half ago. Culture trumps talent. Is that true? Do you believe that? And how much do you believe it? Our Twitter poll today deals with that. We got 830 votes in already.
What say you?
Does culture trump talent? Give us some feedback. 48% of you say not in the week-to-week NFL, which I think is a very interesting answer. 38% of you say, yes, all the time, culture trumps talent. 14% say not at all. Let's hear from you. Phone lines open, 803-0550. Toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. We will get back to that, but Chris is just back after a little media session with head coach Sean McDermott following today's Friday practice. What did you learn, Chris?
I learned everybody's pretty much healthy. Everybody was full go at practice, so even Kevin Johnson and Kurt Coleman, who had been nursing injuries through the early part of the week, full-scale participants, all 53 players. We even asked coaches, is that a little strange in Week 10? He goes, yeah, a little bit. He goes, but we're not complaining about it.
Nope.
And they were outside on the grass because they know they're going to be on grass on Sunday. So he was also asked about Cody Ford, knowing that Cody was dressed last Sunday, but Ty Nsekhe went wire-to-wire at right tackle, and Ford only saw time on the special teams units, you know, field goal block, that kind of stuff. Only got four snaps on special teams last week. They said that was not any – he said it was not any indication that Ty Nsekhe had usurped him and taken the position away from him. He said it was more a precautionary move, knowing that Ford was coming off of that elbow injury. They didn't want to overwork him, so they got him another extra week of rest, essentially, by barely playing him in the game last week. So now he is ready to roll. We asked him if the platoon was going to continue there, and he said, we'll wait and see. But he kind of gave indication that that was, in fact, going to be the case going forward. He was then asked about the potential Myles Garrett matchup, because Garrett does switch from the right side to the left side through the course of the game. He actually played more on the left side, left defensive end for the Browns last week against the Broncos. And he said, yeah, they'll be ready for it. They have to be. It's kind of their job.
It's one of the key, if not the key, matchup in the game.
Defensively, sure, to worry about. Absolutely. So, it's going to be interesting to see who they decide to use more of in the game. Like, is it going to be a strict 50-50 split, or do they feel one of those guys is a better one-on-one matchup against Myles Garrett? And I'm not even so sure that either of those guys are going to go one-on-one against him in any capacity.
Yeah.
Just because of the dominant player that he can be out there on the field. Tight end help, chipping back, move tight end help, you know, anything and anything, I think is warranted to be called up at any point in time against that guy.
On the injury issue, the Bills likely to go into this one with a clean injury report, maybe spotless, really. The question came up in our control room, avid Bills fans in there, about what does that mean. Let me just give an opinion, may I? Mm-hmm. I'm reluctant to start patting anybody on the back just because I don't want to tempt fate. Injuries happen out of nowhere sometimes. It's great that they're at midseason and they're likely to have a clean injury report. What does it mean? Who do we credit for that? Can I just hold off for a few weeks before I start patting people on the back?
Sure. Nobody's telling you to.
Give me your take. I have a feeling. It's great that they're that way, but who knows? Injuries happen all the time.
Right. Yeah.
When you least expect it.
Yeah, there's a measure.
There's no guarantee.
I agree there's a measure of luck with injuries, especially in this sport. I was telling you before we were on the air at the start of the show, perfect example is Olivier Vernon last week against the Denver Broncos. It's the third to last play of the game, and he's trying to make a hustle play to the backside of the field, and he's trying to run down, I think it was Philip Lindsay, I'm not 100% sure, he's trying to run him down on a run play late in the game because they're trying to get the last first down to run out the clock and win the game, and they're only up by five, I think. He gets some friendly fire from a safety trying to come up and make the same tackle. Their knees knock, his leg gets twisted, and he's hobbling off with a knee injury.
And might not play Sunday.
So, I mean, that's just a freak thing that happens just because football is a collision sport. I mean, it's just what it is. So I do believe there is value in the sports science element, load management, and alerting coaches, athletic trainers that – the load on this guy's muscles has been extreme the last two or three days. We have to back off his reps in practice so we don't enhance the risk of injury due to fatigue.
Yep. I do believe there's value in a state-of-the-art training facility, which they have
100% agree with that as well. And I think those things, as Coach likes to say, are baked into the overall health of this roster. But that doesn't mean some guy on the first play from scrimmage on Sunday might twist his knee the wrong way and be out for the rest of the game.
Right.
But I think if there are any places in injury prevention where you can gain an edge, you take it.
Yes.
Because of the nature of this sport.
Good point. And they've done that. All right, we got a break here. Greg Cosell is going to join us when we return from NFL Films and from the NFL Matchup Show on ESPN, his weekly breakdown of the Bills, their opponents, and the rest of the NFL. And come on back for that. Chris is here with us all day long until 3 o'clock. One Bills Live presented by Kalata Health, live from the Seneca Studio. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
So the second half of the season begins Sunday with Buffalo on the road against the Cleveland Browns. Bills likely to win with a clean injury report. Everybody practicing on a full go basis going into today. The Browns have some injury issues, however. Defensive end Olivier Vernon has been ruled out with a knee, as has backup safety Eric Murray. Defensive end Miles Garrett going to be listed as questionable with a knee, although he did have practice on a full go basis today. Been a rough road to 2-6 for the Browns. Preseason darlings considered to be a serious contender. They've still got half a season to make a run. Three of Buffalo's next four games are on the road. The Bills are 3-0 on the road so far, looking to win their first four road games for just the third time in franchise history. Sunday's weather in Cleveland calls for mostly cloudy skies, high around 50. We got the broadcast right here on our flagship radio station, WGR Sports Radio 550. I'll be in the booth with Eric Wood. Sal Capaccio will be on the sidelines on Sunday. The Browns are keeping center J.C. Treader around for a while. He's agreed to a three-year contract extension worth $32.5 million, more than $23 million guaranteed. Treader is a native of Akron, New York, and played his college football at Cornell. Browns running back Kareem Hunt said he's had a lot of time to sit and reflect and think about his eight-game suspension, which will end Sunday against the Bills. He is eligible to play again after serving that suspension for violating the league's personal conduct policy. Last night, Thursday night football, the Oakland Raiders beat Los Angeles Chargers 26-24. Oakland rookie running back Josh Jacobs scoring the winning touchdown on an 18-yard run with just over a minute remaining. Alvin Kamara back in the New Orleans Saints lineup Sunday says he plans to play like he has not missed a beat. He's missed the last two games before their week 9 bye with knee and ankle injuries, but he is ready to go. Washington has put offensive lineman Trent Williams on the reserve non-football injury list, which ends his season. Ends a months-long saga involving the star offensive tackle. Sources say the Redskins are likely to try to trade him. And the Sabres, now just about an hour away from another game. They play 2 o'clock this afternoon in Stockholm, Sweden against Tampa Bay, their first game since last Saturday. And there you go, the update from One Bills Drive. Bills practice is over. John Murphy with Chris Brown. Chris is in place of Steve Tasker today. Steve should be back with us on Monday. Joining us on the line right now, our regular Friday afternoon 1 o'clock guest, executive producer, analyst of NFL Matchup on ESPN, senior producer at NFL Films, Greg Cosell. Hi, Greg. John Murphy and Chris up here in Buffalo. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Murph, Chris, how you guys doing today?
Good.
Doing great. I can't wait for Sunday's game. Greg, I got to tell you, I see matchup issues that the Browns present, not just for the Bills, obviously, but for everybody they play. Now, they've only got two wins, but they got to create headaches, I would think, getting ready for them.
Well, I think when you look at their offense and you certainly look at their wide receiver core, you feel that it's a very tough matchup. I would expect Tre'Davious White to shadow Odell Beckham because they've been using White that way. Look, he shadowed McLaurin last week. But clearly, With the receivers they can put out there, particularly when they go with 11 personnel and put three wide receivers on the field, Beckham, Landry, and Callaway, that's a receiving trio with every dimension you could ask for. And they've certainly got a very good run game with Nick Chubb. So it's actually an offense with a lot of talent. Their O-line has been a bit of an issue. It's been inconsistent this year. And I think that's factored into Mayfield not quite being as comfortable as we thought he might be when the season started.
We I know Murph has. I did as well. We listened to Freddie Kitchens' Monday press conference, you know, the post-mortem on their loss at Denver. And I think he said the word execution 23 times in the press conference, Greg.
That's coach speak.
Well, right. But how right is he with that? And I know Mayfield is the trigger man, but do you see execution issues elsewhere from what you've seen from them on tape of late?
Well, I think execution, Chris, is one of those words that could mean a number of things, and it's a catch-all phrase, certainly when you're talking to the media. You know, I think this is a team that has struggled clearly on third down. They're among the worst third down conversion teams in the league. They've struggled in the red zone. Now, coaches in those two areas will always use the word execution because they do feel that their schemes are positive and are good schemes, and therefore the execution of those schemes is what's causing the problem. But I would say that their O-line has continued to struggle in pass protection. Too many one-on-one matchups in which different O-linemen got beat. Too many assignment breakdowns. I think that's led to Mayfield playing a little fast this year. Although I actually thought Mayfield threw the ball well in the last game. He was aggressive at times, turning it loose, which is kind of his MO. He was a little more accurate than he had been in recent weeks. Now, we still missed a few things by not turning it loose and not pulling the trigger. And they don't have a margin for error right now because they're not executing at a consistent and a high level throughout a game. So their margin for error is very low. And I thought Mayfield missed a big play opportunity that could have been a touchdown early in the third quarter when he had Beckham wide open on a deep over or deep crossing route. And for whatever reason, he never even looked at him. And it was a shot play. So to me, he should have looked at him.
Hey, Greg, what do you mean when you say Mayfield plays fast sometimes? What does that refer to?
You can almost see it just watching the game when you can see the feet moving a little too fast, a little frenetic in his body demeanor, not hitting that back foot and settling into the pocket. You can just see by his movements that he's playing at a tempo that's a little too fast. Think about the really good quarterbacks, how comfortable they look, Murph, when you watch the Bradys, the Brees, guys who drop back and everything appears that it's moving slowly. Mayfield is playing a little frenetically at times.
I want to flip it around, Greg, with you know the reports that Olivier Vernon is out for them, good edge defender and against the run and the pass. How might that help Buffalo's chances, especially with some of that outside zone that they run with Devin Singletary?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure exactly who they will play to out there instead of Vernon. Who's the guy, Chris, that they're likely to play?
Well, I mean, you have Chris Smith there as his backup on the depth chart, and then Chad Thomas also plays in for them. The
rookie, right. He's the rookie, I think, from Miami, I believe. Yeah, I mean, that's
a loss, right?
What's that?
That's a loss for them, for sure, in terms of the
Without
I mean,
question.
They're 30th against the run to begin with. Now they don't have him.
Yeah, that's a downgrade for sure. And, you know, it's kind of surprising to me how poor they've been against the run, given that they have good personnel up front.
Right.
Because they have Sheldon Richardson as their three technique. They have Ogunjobi, who I think is a good player. So I've been surprised by their inability to play the run. I think Schobert shows up, the Mike linebacker mm-hmm. shows up on tape every time I watch them play. So I'm kind of surprised that their run defense has not been more stout. Now, one thing you'll see a lot of, which they've been doing, is they play with what we call big nickel. When the Bills line up with two tight ends on the field, they'll play with three safeties, the Browns. And that's kind of been their base defense versus 12 personnel.
With Greg Cosell, he's executive producer and analyst of NFL Matchup on ESPN. You can catch that show tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. on ESPN2, Sunday, 4 a.m., 6:30 a.m. on ESPN. Let's flip it over to the Bills for a second, Greg.
Sure.
I'm wondering your observations on Devin Singletary's game against Washington, 140 total yards for him, involved heavily in the pass game and the run game. What did you see from him, and where do you see his first year going from here?
You know, it's amazing, Murph. I kind of figured you might ask me about Devin Singletary. You know, given that he played 41 snaps and carried 20 times.
I took a while to get there.
You know, I like Singletary, and it's funny because they really feature three runs with Singletary. They feature two specific perimeter runs. One was a toss play off the jet action that went opposite with the center and the tackle pulling. One was kind of an outside zone pin-pull concept with the center and the guard pulling and the jet action going to the same side as the run. Mm-hmm. So they featured two specific perimeter runs with him, plus inside zone. And I think those outside runs, if they can clear the edge for Singletary, I think he's got a lot of juice. I like Singletary quite a bit. And, you know, I think, I don't know if this was sort of the changing of the guard, but clearly he played over 40 snaps and Gore was at about 20 snaps. Gore did have 11 carries. The way the game played out, obviously they just continued to run the football. But I'd be real curious to see, Murph, and I don't know what your sense of it is, if this is sort of the day that we remember is a little bit of the changing of the guard.
Yeah, you might be onto something there.
With respect to Singletary, Greg, just from your observations of him on tape, and I know it's a somewhat limited sample size with him in a Bills uniform, but his patience as a runner to run behind the men that are in front of him. You know, oftentimes we'll see a rookie running back not be patient. They'll see a crack and try to exploit it. What is your assessment of him in terms of patience as a runner?
Well, one of the things I think that those outside perimeter plays do is they almost demand patience because obviously you're running laterally initially. So, you know, I think those are good runs for him. The inside zone does require patience because you can't just run it up in there. You have to let something happen up front in front of you. So I don't really see an issue with his patience, but that's my sense of it. You know, the other factor is he's a really good receiver, and I think he gives them some opportunities. We know about the screen, but they also missed him. It wasn't a miss per se. I mean, Allen did make a bad throw, but he had a move when they ran that what I call all-go H seam, where he runs the vertical seam from the halfback position in the backfield where he's offset. I'm sure you remember the play. It hit the defender, I believe, in the helmet.
Yep, right.
And yeah, he can do that as well. In other words, he's not just a screen back or a check down back. I think he gives you some intermediate and vertical dimension in the pass game as well.
Hey, Greg, going back to the Browns for a minute and their young running back, Nick Chubb, maybe under the radar for many NFL fans, but this guy's very talented and presents a pretty big challenge for the Bills. How's that matchup look for Buffalo?
Oh, I like Chubb a lot. I mean, he's a decisive downhill runner. He's got really good vision. He's got great short area burst. He's explosive. He can move the pile. I think he's really at his best running inside, although they have used him at times on perimeter runs. But I think he's best on inside zone, on gap scheme concepts. Although, as I said, I think his skill set allows him to be effective in all run concepts. They've been giving him the ball a bit more. He had 20 carries last week, only 65 yards. But you're seeing him right here, and I remember this run extremely well. He showed about a 10th gear on this run. So he showed some real speed, long speed on this run. And he's a load to handle. He had some really good runs against the Patriots a few weeks ago. He's a tough assignment now.
What about, and I haven't, I'm going to be honest here, I haven't watched enough of their games, but last week against Denver, they had him in some I formation with a fullback. Have they turned to that often, or was that a new wrinkle for them last week?
I don't think they've done a ton of it, Chris, that I can recall. You know, my guess is they're trying to find some stability and continuity to their offense. And normally when teams are trying to do that, they look to the run game. Normally the pass game is not what gives you stability and continuity. Normally it's the run game. And I think that they'll – now, again, I think the player they used as a fullback was a tight end, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't think it was
a fullback.
Yes, you're right.
But I could
about
be
that.
Wrong on that. I think they often play Devolve back there, Seth Devolve. So it's usually a tight end, but they do line up in the eye formation, both the straight eye and the offset eye.
Well, I have one more question for you about this Sunday Bills-Browns matchup, Greg, and it's back to the Browns for a second. As a talent evaluator, a guy who digs deep into the tape, what do you do with a team that clearly has all that talent and underperforms? How do you evaluate that? How can you predict what the Browns might do when you see a team that doesn't really match up to the players they put on the field?
Oh, well, we've seen that many times throughout the NFL. You know, that's a hard question to answer because, you know, you're not there every day.
Right.
But it's clearly a talented team, Murph. I mean, you know, there's any given game, and you sure hope it's not this week from your perspective, but in any given game, Mayfield can be really sharp. Beckham can go 7 for 150. You know, Landry, at his best, is as good a slot receiver as there is. Callaway gives you another explosive dimension on the other side. So they've got weapons. Why it's not working, you know, again, you can come back to the execution element. I'm sure if people study it probably even harder than I do because I'm trying to watch many, many games every week, there may be other factors. But there's something that's not in sync with their offense, particularly with the pass game.
Yeah.
I think they've run the ball at times pretty well. But with the pass game, it's been somewhat condensed. They haven't had many explosive pass plays, which is something we expected.
Yeah, we know John Brown's been very consistent for the Bills' passing game. I'm curious for a somewhat of a thumbnail sketch on the two corners for Cleveland. You know, Denzel Ward and the rookie Greedy Williams.
Greedy Williams, yeah.
Yeah, I know Ward's been overpowered at times because he's not a big corner, you know, especially in some of those jump ball situations. We saw Cortland Sutton reach over him and pull a touchdown in last week against Denver. But how have those two fared, and has Cleveland employed one of them to travel with a top receiver at times this year?
No, they really haven't. I mean,
okay.
They've only been together recently because Williams was hurt quite a bit.
Right.
Ward was hurt earlier in the year. So right now, they've only played, I think, together for, Chris, maybe two games, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
But Ward plays left corner. Williams plays right corner. And they're both very, very talented. Ward got beat, obviously, on that contested catch touchdown. He actually had very good coverage. He's just not as big a man as Sutton.
Yeah.
They went after him a couple of times as well. Sutton caught a 19-yard slant against him where he ran a great, great route and got Ward turned around from press man position. I think Ward's comfortable playing press man. I think that's probably his comfort zone. He's just small. That was a concern for a lot of people. I think he was 180, maybe 190 pounds at most at the scouting combine.
And eyeball, he doesn't look. And even looking at him eyeball wise, Greg, sorry to interrupt. Even looking at him eyeball wise, you almost wonder, is he 180? I mean, he looks spindly. You know what I mean?
I would agree. I mean, you know, that was why for some people he was not a fourth pick in a draft, even though they liked his skill set. Greedy Williams is a different player. He's long. He's lean. He's athletic. I think he needs a lot of technique work. I thought he needed that at LSU. He's a young player without a lot of experience. So they're counting on, Chris, those two corners to develop. And in their mind, they're not there yet, but in their mind, essentially have two shutdown corners.
Yeah.
With Greg Cosell, executive producer, analyst of NFL Matchup, senior producer, NFL Films. Let's get you around the rest of the league a little bit, Greg. And the Baltimore Ravens, the Bills have them a month away, December 8th. They'll be here in Buffalo. Do you think by then someone will have figured out what to do with Lamar Jackson? The Patriots didn't have many answers last week.
You know, I don't know whether it'll happen this year, but it will happen. You know, it reminds me a lot of when Greg Roman was the OC in San Francisco with Colin Kaepernick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that what was most fascinating about them beating the Patriots was they did it really without much of a passing game. They were able to use their very multiple run game, which obviously includes Jackson, and almost put up 30 offensive points essentially without the pass game being a big factor in the game. And I think if you told me that before the game, Murph, I would have said there was no way that was going to happen.
The Raiders with a nice win over the Chargers. Granted, they got spotted some points there with a couple of Phillip Rivers interceptions last night, but you think Josh Jacobs is putting himself in firm contention for Offensive Rookie of the Year with the season he's put together here?
Oh, I love Josh Jacobs, Chris. I would say right now, I see him as a top five back in the league right now. I think his combination of traits and his overall skill set is really, really good. He's a power runner. He's an elusive runner. He's got stop and start ability. He's shifty. There's nothing he can't do. He's a good receiver, and I think we'll see more of that as he plays more. He's tough. I mean, I remember watching him make blocks at Alabama, and you just went, wow. I mean, he goes after it pretty good. So, I mean, to me, I know he's a rookie. I think he's on pace probably for 270, 280 carries, which is an awful lot for a rookie. But I think, to me, he's a top five back in the league right now.
Hey, Greg, the Monday night game is pretty solid this week. The 7-2 Seahawks with their really good defense and the 8-0 Niners with their great defense. Maybe the best matchup of the week, I would think, Monday Night Football, huh?
Yeah, we're devoting a full segment to it in the matchup show, and there's a lot of elements to this game. I think the Seahawks defense has struggled a bit. I think they're trying to find ways to be better. So last week against the Bucs, we saw them blitz more than they normally do. They played a good amount of man coverage, and they still struggled. So I think they're trying to find their way defensively. Offensively, we know what the Seahawks are. They'll start with the run game with Chris Carson. And then, of course, they have Russell Wilson, who's been very, very good both from the pocket, within the structure of the offense, and we know that he's very, very good outside the structure of the offense.
I wonder, Greg, if I can get just talk about Russell Wilson for a minute, if you would, and in this sense, I love the way his career has sort of morphed. You know what I mean? He's a different passer now, a different player now than he was when he came into the league. And I know he's been around for a while, but I love to see guys who develop and become different players. I think Wilson has done that, hasn't he?
Well, I think he's the same as he's been at least the last couple of years, Murph. You know, yeah. People say, well, gee, he's having his best year ever. What's different? I don't think he's really different. I think they have better weapons on the perimeter. Now that they have Metcalf, they have another explosive outside weapon that can present and provide big plays for him, along with Tyler Lockett. So that gives him another weapon. And here you see Metcalf, who's kind of a freak. I mean, he's 6'4", 228 pounds. So now they've been able to be a little more explosive in their structured pass game, and we know how good Wilson is when he moves, as we're seeing here. I mean, he just has an ability. He has an ability to do something, guys, that you would never teach anybody and would be viewed as a cardinal sin of quarterback play, but he can do it, and that's he can drop his eyes, look at the rush, move around, and refocus downfield. You never tell quarterbacks to drop their eyes and look at the rush, but he has a unique knack to be able to do that, refocus, and make great throws.
The other intriguing matchup for me, Greg, is Green Bay, Carolina, you know, two teams firmly in contention in the NFC. I know Green Bay is not a good run defense statistically. How big a task is Christian McCaffrey going to be for them? You know, I know he's a little nicked up, but, I mean, it looks like he's going to play. So what do you see there in terms of that matchup? Are they going to be able to slow McCaffrey down? Nobody else has, it seems.
No, only Tampa Bay, to be honest with you, Chris. The two games against Tampa Bay, he rushed for under 40 yards, but no one else has. And he leads the NFL in carries per game, the only back carrying the ball 20 or more times per game. I think he's going to have to be a big factor. They've got a multiple run game. The big question for me is what the Panthers do from a personnel perspective on offense. Because the one thing about Mike Pettine, the D coordinator for the Packers, is he really likes to play in the sub packages, meaning nickel with five defensive backs and dime with six defensive backs. And when Carolina lines up with two tight ends or a fullback, is Mike Pettine going to stay with the little people, or will he put more big people on the field?
Hey,
just
Greg,
one final point about McCaffrey.
Yep.
A tremendous receiver, both offset in the backfield and detached from the formation.
We saw him for the two joint practices that the Bills had with the Panthers back in August down there in Spartanburg. Greg, I got to tell you, there was nobody that could run with him. He was just so much quicker and faster. Just short area quickness was mind-blowing. And, I mean, the Bills are like a top-five defense. They had nobody that could hang with. He was catching like 10, 12 passes every practice. It was crazy.
No, he's a terrific player. I mean, he's another guy. You know, I mentioned Josh Jacobs. McCaffrey has obviously played longer, and he would be better than Jacobs at this point. Clearly, he's a top three back in the league without question.
Hey, Greg, thanks for this. Good talking with you. We will discuss again next Friday. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Hopefully we get another Bills win.
Yeah, we'll see. They're
have a good weekend.
Good at that right now. Greg Cosell is executive producer, analyst, NFL Matchup, senior producer, NFL Films. You can see the show, NFL Matchup, on ESPN. You got to probably want to roll your DVR. Tomorrow, 7 a.m. on ESPN2, although you told me last week you're up for that. I'll probably get up and watch that tomorrow.
Yeah, I caught I missed the first 5 minutes, so I caught most of it, though. And I I've always liked Matt. You know, even from the time when he was here briefly as a player.
Yep. You got to like Greg.
Just a good X's and O's guy. And, yeah, I mean, he pours over the tape, Cosell. So,
yep.
I mean, these guys are film junkies. And it's just nice to have them shuck it down to the Cobb for you.
Yep.
Where you don't have to do all the work. They kind of do it for you. You know what I mean? It's just kind of a good way to kind of get a handle on what the rest of the league is running because, you know, we suffer from Bills myopia here.
That's
so.
Right.
It's nice to kind of get a handle on what the rest of the league is turning to, running, employing scheme-wise to kind of have answers every week.
NFL Matchup tomorrow, 7 a.m. on ESPN2. Sunday, 4 a.m., 6:30 a.m. on ESPN. And we thank Greg Cosell for joining us with that. All right, we're going to take a break. We are cutting loose from radio side for Sabres pregame show coming up. We will remain on the television side on MSG, so stick around for that. We'll discuss more. Our topic of the day, does culture trump talent? You can weigh in on that. Send in tweets if you want to talk about that. We're back with more in a moment. One Bills Live from the Seneca Studio in Orchard Park, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.